and welcome to NoClip, the podcast about the people who play and make video games. I'm your host, Danny O'Dwyer. We've had a lot of people on who have made video games, so it's about time we've had someone on who plays them. And this isn't just anyone, this is a friend of NoClip and somebody I've wanted to collaborate with for quite a while. So I'll let him introduce himself. Clint, how are you doing this fine Friday afternoon?
I'm doing great, thank you. Hey, Danny.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. I'll kind of get into what we're going to talk about in a hot second. But tell us your name, where you are right now, and what we're here to talk about.
All right. My name is Clint Stewart. I go by Disabled Cable on Twitter and Jehovah Nova on Steam. A bunch of other names. I think Three Leg Dog, maybe one of them. I've been a gamer most of my life. And almost 7 years ago, I was injured very badly, and I lost my left arm and I broke my back as well. So trying to learn how to play games one-handed has been quite the challenge.
And you're somebody who can kind of speak to the accessibility question from somebody who has experienced playing games with no disability and experiencing games with a pretty heavy one as well. We've a lot to get into today. Before we sort of talk about, I guess, your experience more generally, I just want to let everyone know kind of how this came to happen for this episode of the podcast. I've been wanting to do something with Clint for a long time because his insight into this is super refreshing, and he's a very eloquent speaker. But we've sort of struggled to get that project sort of up and running. We're hoping to do it in the future. But what happened in the past month, I guess, is this sort of general conversation that's been going on around Sekiro, easy mode, and accessibility, which I did a video on NoClip. You can watch an episode of Bonus Level that's kind of all about that. And that was kind of my opinion on it, but I thought the way NoClip works is that we often ask the experts about these things, people who aren't, we're not just giving, you know, my opinion on the state of development or design or anything, but we go out and we find people who are experts in these issues. Clint is an expert in this, not only because of the way in which he plays games, but also because he's a fan of the particular series in question. Pretty early on, I kind of tapped him up and was like, hey, when you've played the game a bit, can you come on the podcast and sort of chew the shit with us about this? First of all, thank you so much for coming on and making the time.
Thank you. I gotta say, start off with too, you did buy it for me too, so I got it to be first off. I've never been called an expert, and you did buy the game for me, so that's all, like, all that's out of the way and start now. So
hey Matt, yeah, we don't let interns, you know, we don't do unpaid internships or don't pay people who are contributing to our work. So absolutely, it's the least we could do. So before we touch on Sekiro, can you tell us a little bit about how you generally play games? Like, if you're going out to buy a game today, Clint, like, what are the considerations that you have to sort of take into account, and how do you actually play them?
Definitely. And this is a great first question, because it really made me think about the Souls games and games like those, and just everything that I have to take into consideration when I buy a game. The last game that I bought that was similar to Sekiro would be Nioh, and I had to refund Nioh when I first bought it, because they released that PC port with no mouse and keyboard controls whatsoever. Like, I'm used to some games mouse and keyboard not working in the menus, or maybe I can't rebind the keys in game, but I can do it in the Razer Synapse software. But with Nioh, it was just like, no, you better buy a controller or it's just not going to work. And it's one of the first and only times I've ever had to refund a game.
Is that rare? Does that happen often?
That is extremely rare these days, thankfully. And enough people, I got on Twitter, which my tweet, you know, might've got like 2 likes, and I don't think it got noticed by anybody, but more than just me was coming out saying, hey, this needs mouse and keyboard support. You can't release a PC game with no mouse and keyboard support. And I was hoping that maybe like the Dark Souls before the remastered that just came out,
right,
the community got together and made mouse and keyboard controls work in that game as well. Because that the first Dark Souls port was horrible. It's one of the worst ports I think I've ever played. And the community got the what was it called? The DS Fix, I guess the one guy,
yes,
made. But then they added on to it and added mouse and keyboard support. But they still didn't get the prompts right. So you would get a prompt on the screen to do something, but it would say it would be the controller prompt. You still wouldn't get the mouse and keyboard, which is extremely frustrating when you're trying to remember you've just changed everything up, and you think you remember what you did, but then, you know, it's, oh, that's extremely frustrating. So generally when I buy a game, I look, does it have rebindable keys? And if not, that's not always a deal breaker, but does it just have mouse keyboard support in general? Because I have two different one-handed controllers, and I don't want to knock the guys that worked on those that created them. One of them was the first guy who I'd ever seen even do this. He has a channel on YouTube, and each controller has its own issues. But I mean, for what they are, there really is no other choice if you have to play console games. I mean, because they still haven't gotten around to adding mouse and keyboard support fully on Xbox. Or I think PlayStation has it some in a couple games. But even like Xbox, they just added it, and they have a partnership with Razer. But yet, if you were to turn on the Xbox and try to just use the mouse and keyboard, or in my case, the mouse and the footboard, which is the stinky board, you can't do anything. You have to use a controller to navigate the UI and then to find the game that will work with mouse and keyboard. And it's a lot to think about when you're looking at games.
Yeah, it's a whole lot of questions that most of us don't really have to consider at all. So when you're interacting with these games, obviously the bindable keys, you said, is a really important part of it. But like, what are you using physically? Because presumably you're not using both a mouse and keyboard. You're remapping this to a third party peripheral or a sort of...
So yeah, let me explain that a little better. I use a 19 button mouse that's called a Razer Naga.
Wow.
Razer is a company that makes it, and the Naga is the brand, and it's made for MMO. It's called an MMO mouse, which I have used it in an MMO, and you know, we can talk about that later. I think that's one of the games that I used to kind of teach myself how to play again was World of Warcraft. And then I also use a stinky board, which is a four button footboard. Now both of these hardware have software tied to them as well that will allow you to completely rebind. You can make any of the buttons whichever button you want, and then the Razer software is even more powerful because you can make macros as well. And there are certain games like Devil May Cry 5 that just came out recently. That's a beautiful game. It's brilliant. It's a lot of fun to play, but for me as a one-arm gamer, that was infuriating because you had to press like three different buttons to be able to do some moves, and that was including having to hold down a button for lock-on. So I ended up having to go in the Razer Synapse software and make a simple on-off macro for lock-on just so I could do some of the moves in that game. Out of all the things that they could forget to add, like, of course, I would love to see ultra-wide support or unlock frame rate, which, you know, the game does have unlock frame rate, but just simple lock-on, being able to just toggle that on or off, just like maybe you want to have sprint always on, have a toggle on sprint or a toggle on crouch. For like, lock-on should be something that just needs to be industry standard. Do you want it, you know, toggleable or not?
Wow.
Just help people out. That's definitely something I've come across in a few different games.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that consideration at all. When you're playing then, so you have a prosthesis, right? Like you have
I actually do have government's subsidies, or I shouldn't say subsidized, because I had to go through a legal battle just to get Medicare and Medicaid. I've talked to you about my story before, what happened. They denied me disability. I actually got denied twice and had to get a disability lawyer to get disability. And then when I finally got in court, the judge was like, oh, my Lord, son, we're going to take care
of
this.
And goodness.
I was in and out of there in 10 minutes. But
on what grounds
point,
were they?
It took like 2.5 years. You know what? The first letter I got back, they were like, oh, he can still bend over and lift things. I'm like, with what good back and what two arms? Like, did you even read what your doctor said? Oh, bureaucrats, man.
That's incredible. So the judge, like, you know, took one glance at you and kind of...
Yeah, as soon as I got into the front of the judge, he was just like, I'm so sorry, sir, and we're going to get this taken care of. And within, like, the next 3 months, I had an arm. You know, it was like, I think the government paid $90,000 for it, I want to say. And it's very nice, but it's very limited. I mean, it's the first version, right? Like, I've got a few complaints about it, but one of the most being is how heavy it is, because it's carbon fiber and it's got a battery, and also due to the kind of amputation that I had, I don't have a lot of arm left, so it's pretty much just resting on my shoulder, which is supported by my back, which again, my L3 and L5 were severely cracked, and my L4 looks like a spider web. They didn't think I'd be able to walk again, so you know, that's a miracle in itself, but I'm still walking and talking. So I count my lucky stars, and I don't complain about too many things, But definitely this whole conversation around accessibility versus difficulties really got me thinking. Your video was great that it looked at the nuance of it. You didn't just, you know, do one hot take or try to ride the fence. You know, I saw your other tweet when you compared it to how you play racing games. And that really hit home for me because I would love to play VR games, but yet you don't see me demanding them make all VR games playable for me with one hand because, you know, that's still, they're still creating that space. Like if I was to buy VR now, I might be able to play like a Dirt Rally or maybe Elite Dangerous. That'd probably be the only two games I could really play in VR.
Yeah. So let's jump into that then now, since you brought it up, like how do you feel then about that sort of, I mean, it was a very broad conversation that sort of was almost like numerous different conversations that were bumping into each other, but just like, you know, speaking from the heart, like what was your initial reaction to the conversation about that? And what was your opinion on it?
Honestly, I really feel like it's a branding problem. I feel like if, let's say they added an easy mode tomorrow in Sekiro or the Dark Souls games, or you're not going to care, right? Like, is it going to lessen the experience that you had? No. I could enable easy mode in my game right now because I ended up getting that mod. They patched it, and then my workaround for the ultra wide fix wasn't working anymore. So I found a mod that it unlocks the FPS, does the ultra wide, lets you choose some camera adjustments. Where the game works now is if you target someone, the camera automatically snaps to you, or if you move at all, the camera automatically will snap back on you, and this mod will disable that as well as give you FOV adjustment. I know it's something TB was always preaching about, but that really makes a huge difference when you're sitting really close to the monitor. Having a bigger FOV is huge, but that same mod will also let you turn down the speed. Which isn't that how the guy from PC Gamer, I forget his name, but he was like, I cheated and I feel fine.
Right.
It's like, I feel like it's just a branding problem, right? If we called it cheats, I think everybody would be happy because the people that don't care would just be like, yeah, I cheated. Who gives a shit? And then everybody else would be like, you cheated yourself and the game.
That's a good point.
Like, because it's all the same thing. We're just talking, like you say, we're kind of talking around each other. We're all talking about different things, but they do kind of correlate. Like if you... I really do feel like it's a branding problem. Let's just call it cheats and just be done with it. Because even though I could cheat in this game, I'm not going to do it. I love this game. Honestly, the boss I had the most trouble with so far was a mini boss. It's not even the main bosses I've encountered. And I should say I haven't beaten the game yet. You got it for me like a couple weeks ago. I've been taking my time. I've been enjoying it. I've been exploring everywhere.
Good. Me too. You're way ahead of me, buddy.
Oh, really? That makes me feel good. I'm like, he's probably going to beat the game and be like, you're where? The biggest difference for me, I feel like with accessibility versus difficulty, like I recently beat The Witcher 3 as well. And that's a game that I've had to start over because I ended up like having to wipe my hard drive. So I lost like 80 hours. And then I ended up like, I'm just going to do everything. And so I spent like another 150 hours just like trying to clear my map. So I finally beat that recently. And that was a game I actually turned down the difficulty on a few of those last fights just because they were annoying. Like the controls are transcendent in Sekiro, even more so than Dark Souls.
Well, it's funny. Like you're talking about how, you know, you're adding all these things and you're saying I'm not, you're not cheating. Like some people could argue that you're playing the game at like a way higher level, like because you're playing with your foot and one hand, whereas most of us have like access to two analog sticks.
This game makes me feel like a ninja. It really does. And I'm playing a one arm ninja. So the symbolism is not lost on me. Like I completely adore this. And the fact that, like you said, maybe I'm playing on a higher level, I have felt like that has hindered me in some games. Let's take Dark Souls, for example. Even on the remaster, the PC, the mouse and keyboard controls are not perfect. They're not. I had to make a macro in that game for the jump attack. And then like a kick, I think, where you have to press like two buttons at once. One of them is like forward and attack, and the other is like, I forget exactly what it is, but I had to make that simple macro just because those buttons wouldn't always register, because I've got W on my footboard. So I guess I should just tell you a little about this. I've got W and S on my footboard, so where those are very close together, where I can press them very quickly if I need to. And the first two buttons I have on the Naga, which there's a row of 12 buttons on the side. And the very first two right where my thumb constantly rests are left and right, so A and D. And I did it that way so that I could press them in combination together, because the Stinky Board, when I first got it, its first driver revision, it wouldn't allow you to press more than one key at a time. So I couldn't, like, for instance, you know, press two buttons on there at the same time. Where if I tie it to the mouse, I'm able to do like a shift, move to the left, and move forward at the same time. So it's kind of like a diagonal, you know. You're pressing three buttons at once to do what two buttons should do. And it's little workarounds like that that I've had to get comfortable with. I used to make a profile for each game that I play, but then, I mean, I've got a gigantic Steam library now. I started to realize I need presets, right? Like, this is the preset for, like, action RPGs. This is the preset for shooters. Like, this is my strategy preset. So I've just kind of had to learn just by doing, like, okay, this is what I should do.
Right. So are there some genres then that are like totally off the cards? Like, just, you're saying up, down, left, right. Like, Mortal Kombat just came out. Like, are you able to play that at all?
I have not played a fighting game since my accident. And I would say, I grew up playing Street Fighter. I had a Street Fighter callus. People that played that game will know what I'm talking about. If you played enough of it, you would develop a callus. And it's depending on what kind of characters you like playing too. And I never played the Guile and the M. Bison kind of characters. I always liked the Ryu and the Kens, and then the 360 characters like Zangief and stuff. So my thumbs got destroyed, especially depending on what controller you used. And now with the setup I have, I could play Street Fighter if I programmed everything, or if I played like with simplified control. Because I think they introduced that in one of the games. It was like, you can do advanced moves by just pressing a button. And this, I tried it and was just like, this is so boring. Now, I haven't tried it since I've been hurt. This was several years ago. And I just know that the game wouldn't be fun to me to play it that way. Like, I'm not looking for something so easy that it's just mind-numbing. Like, that's not – I do play games to be challenged and that, you know, to have a good time. And just pressing one button over and over is not really that's not a good time.
I think that's why I was so impressed by the fact that you were playing these games, because, like, for me, you know, as somebody who has both my hands, I was incredibly intimidated to play Bloodborne last year, and I did I'd never really played a Soulsborne game until last year, and then the reason I played it was because I, you know, we just had a kid, and I was spending hours and hours lying on the sofa with her asleep on my chest, and there was nothing I could do except play games. I thought, well, fuck it, this is probably as good a time as ever to actually try and.
So you play with a baby on your chest? Wow!
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about being calm and in the moment.
Well, it kind of like it forced me to like actually like, I don't know, be very intentional, and like I couldn't get frustrated because she'd wake up if I started to like shout or move or get angry or throw a controller. So like, you know, going back and playing the first Dark Souls, which I did, you know, months after when the remaster came out, and also playing Sekiro, like I found them very, very intimidating. You know, what other games do you play, and why is there something special about those Sekiro and Soulsborne games?
So, yes, they, first of all, they are brilliant. Like, they're a masterclass in game design, whether it's the art team. Now, the only thing you could really like knock against it maybe be the story. The story in the Souls games is pretty obtuse. You kind of have to go looking for it. Maybe you need to watch some lore videos. And I'm glad that this new game, there are cinematics. There is like a more of a traditional story. I do appreciate the fact that it's not quite so. They respect the player, and that they, when they teach you something, they expect you to have learned that and begin, not necessarily master it right away, but begin to start working on it. There's so many times where I have, after I've beaten a boss, I've been like, okay, so let me see. Well, how is, you know, what's the cheese for this strategy? Is there a cheese? And I'll like look it up after just to see if like maybe did I do it the cheap way? And I actually thought that I had beaten what's her name, Lady Butterfly. I thought I had cheesed her, because how I killed her was I love, they have fake attacking in this game. Like, you can act like you're gonna attack and then block and it will fake it, and that's very similar to World of Warcraft fake casting. As a caster in WoW, you don't want them to interrupt your heal, like the one you got to get off, or the spell you have to get off. So you kind of have to fake cat, like you're, I'm going to cast, use your interrupt. Nope, haha, gotcha. And that's built into the gameplay. So I kind of tricked her and baited her into getting into a corner. And then one of her like really killer moves in the air, I only had to dodge twice and I'd be able to attack her, at least get like two attacks off on her when she's in a corner. So I look up the cheese on her and the cheese is like, just do this one move over and over and over and over and over. And I was like, holy shit, that's so cheesy. I thought I cheesed it, but like, no, I didn't cheese it at all.
You talking about cheese also sort of like goes into the, you know, previous point you made about this being like a marketing issue, like the delineation between accessibility and cheats and then cheeses and strategy. Because like one of the things that came to my mind when we were talking about easy modes in these games was the music box in Bloodborne, which is like it's a fucking easy mode. It's like
I'm not familiar with that.
So if you Father Gascoigne have you played Bloodborne? Of course, it's a PlayStation.
So yeah, I should say it's on PlayStation. I haven't played it because I only have the Xbox one-handed controllers, and then I'm hoping they just add. They bring everything to PC. I know they're not going to bring everything to PC, but at least let me use like mouse and keyboard, or in my case, mouse and footboard on console. Because one-handed controllers, no matter which one I have, they don't compare. Like for me, having one hand, a mouse and this footboard, there's just nothing that comes close to that. And it's such a shame. I feel like I saw the tweet from the God of War guy, and I'm like, yeah, your games really aren't accessible to me at all, buddy. But and I know he wasn't thinking like that, but. I hate exclusivity, man. I really do. I wish you could play everything on anything. That's what I hope the future of gaming is, honestly.
Yeah, I'd never even considered the fact that basically the PlayStation games are completely off the cards. So Spider-Man.
I played Bloodborne. Yeah. I haven't played Spider-Man. Yeah, Spider-Man's the one that's killing me. It's even more so than Bloodborne or God of War. It's Spider-Man. I want to play Spider-Man so bad.
Metal Gear Solid 5, did that come out on PC?
Yes, that was on PC. Yes, and that was actually great.
Let me quickly explain that the music box thing, because then I've got another question just now that we've brought up the Metal Gear Solid thing. In Bloodborne, they're one of the first bosses you meet, Father Gascoigne. Earlier, like I'd say, at least half of players run into this like windowsill where somebody who I think you later find out then is his daughter gives you a music box, and if you use the music box during the fight, he basically staggers, and you can use it like infinitely up until you can use it three times during the fight, but it's basically a free hit.
Oh wow!
And it completely changes the difficulty in that. It like I would say cut the difficulty at least in half for that fight for new players.
You used or did you avoid it because
the first time I played through it, Bloodborne had been out for so long that at that stage, you know, I think I was working at GameSpot when it came out, so somebody did a video about that. So when it came around, the first time I played it, I definitely did it. But in subsequent playthroughs, I haven't bothered because I've gotten better at it by that stage.
Yeah, you've
which,
but yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That's kind of how those games work, right?
But it's funny, like the skills that you have, right? Like that makes sense. They definitely they want you to learn. I feel like these games are trying to teach people patience and just not to give up.
Totally, but at the same time, they're not like completely walling it off to people who
I don't think so.
No, I don't think that's the intent. I don't think it's like some crazy hardcore.
The quote that everyone loves to put up, you know, when they talk about, oh, it'll never have an easy mode. This is from Miyazaki. I'm sure I'm saying it wrong. The quote everyone always loves to throw up is we don't want to include a difficulty section. A selection, because we want to bring everyone to the same level of discussion and the same level of enjoyment. The next part of that quote is, so we want everyone to first face that challenge and to overcome it in some way that suits them as a player. That's the part everyone always leaves out. And I feel like with this one, they really nailed it, because they included a lot of options in terms of changing the key bindings. And some of Dark Souls, you couldn't change some of the keys at first. Like it was just completely locked out. The camera options that they added in, the fact that they even included a selection now to show keyboard and mouse prompts instead of just, even though you changed the settings and maybe even changed what the key bindings were, it still would show up Xbox buttons. That's so infuriating. So
absolutely. And, whenever I play PC games and I've got my Xbox controller plugged in, that sort of happens. And it irritates me, but obviously the other way around, it happens all the time, I imagine.
There's the other side of that, too, where games like Battlefield, and I don't know if this works in the newest one, but it did work in Battlefield 3 and Battlefield 4 as well. You could set up different key bindings, right? Like they've always allowed that. But then they also would allow you to set the plane to a flight stick. So if you had like a cheap little joystick or something, or a controller even, you could set it to where when you got in the plane, it would switch over to the controller. And then when you eject it, you can go back to mouse and keyboard. And I always thought that was brilliant. And I wish more games would do stuff like that. Because, I mean, granted, you're taking into account people have additional expensive hardware. And that's the other thing people don't always think about. Is all this accessibility stuff is really expensive. I even saw the Xbox guys getting crap because their XAC was $100. When you look at what they did, they could have easily charged $300 for that. And they still probably would have been taking a loss.
Another element of this that you brought up a second ago was the, I guess the way in which the lore of Sekiro sort of marries with your personal experience as well. I've actually noticed it. I'm not sure if this is just because accessibility has been part of the sort of general gaming conversation more now than it certainly was in the past. But I've noticed that this recent trend with, player characters with like prostheses on their arms. Am I crazy, or is this like just suddenly appeared everywhere?
No, it's definitely starting to be a thing. I got asked like what was my favorite disabled superhero maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And the only one I could even think of like in gaming or in comics was the guy from Deus Ex, the remake or whatever. What's his name?
Jensen. What was it?
Jensen was the guy from the last two, I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Adam Jensen. We got there.
Yeah, you got me thinking J.C. Denton. I was about to say J.C. Yeah, that's the original. But yeah. the remakes or whatever, the reimaginings, because he was the only one I could really think of. And then since then, you've had the chick on the battlefield cover.
Right.
There's people in Overwatch that only have one arm.
Apex Legends, I think. There's
Apex Legends as well. Yeah, well, they got a whole cyborg in that one too.
Right. Solid Snake.
I do feel
Snake,
like it's kind of a new trend. Yeah, that actually, you know what? That hit me the hardest. That's something I could talk about real quick.
Yeah, go for it. Absolutely.
That scene was so powerful. It totally blew my mind. Now, I didn't have exact similar experience where I woke up and like I knew I came into the hospital talking about chop me off, like chop it off, just chop it off. I know it's gone, chop it off. And those doctors and nurses looked at me like I was crazy. Like, damn, how is he living? Like, what? And they actually, I don't know if I told you this story, but they didn't even know about my back. I woke up after my amputation and was like, holy shit, my arm is gone. I need to smoke. And they're like, you can't go outside. And I'm like, you can't tell me what to do. And then I fell on my face. And that's when they're like, oh, we need to check something. That's when they found out my spine was all screwed up. But yeah, getting off topic. So Call of Duty, in the last like two or three Call of Duties, it seemed like they were just kept having Buddy would always get his arm chopped off. There'd always be that scene where like it's just gruesome and they're tearing the arm off or it's getting trapped in a door or something. And then you see you getting dragged away and your arm's like left there. They did that, I know, for at least 2 years in a row. That never bothered me or impacted me at all. I played that opening scene of Metal Gear, and now, granted, most of it is like just kind of a walking sim for the first hour, hour and a half, but that first 20, 30 minutes is very powerful because you wake up, and I do remember waking up in a hospital bed and being like, what do you mean I can't get up? Oh, you did what to my back? Oh my God, my arm is gone. That was very surreal, very powerful. And to have David Bowie playing over it too, like, of course, you know, those guys come in and kill the one guy a couple minutes later, but it was a very powerful scene. I love Hideo Kojima. That guy is a genius. I hope I get to play his next one.
What was it like, I guess, as well? You know, the subtitle for that game is Phantom Pain, which we've talked in the past.
Oh, yeah.
That's obviously a massive issue for yourself and for people in your situation.
And trying to describe that for people is, it's nearly impossible. I mean, it's a constant thing that I have to worry about. And over the last, I want to say the last year or so, it's gotten a lot better in terms of I'm not getting the spikes. And have you ever had like a searing headache to where, or let's say stomach pain, where your stomach's hurting, right? But then you get those surges to where you just want to double up and you can't do anything. Phantom Pain is like that. Like it can be a constant just aggravation or just something that's constantly in the back of your mind, or it could constantly just be bringing you to your knees where you can't do anything else. There is no, I mean, I've cussed out my mama before. I love my mom. I would never do that, right? I've been hurting bad enough to cuss my mom out. That's kind of how I have to explain it to people. Like, it hurts bad enough, it'll make you cuss your mom out. And you type of person not normally do that, that's saying a lot. It's a mind fuck, man. And I'm sorry for cussing, but I've really no other way of describing it. It is unreal. I wish there were words that I could use to give it justice. And for some people, I've heard stories where it lasts 90 days. You know, they lose a limb, and 90 days later, they're fine. Maybe it aggravates them every now and then, but for the most part, they're fine. But for some reason with me, this October will be 7 years, and I'm still dealing with it. So I wish I had an answer as to why, but I don't.
Does that, you know, presumably not just playing, you know, video games, but that must impact every moment of your life?
Oh, yeah. The first thing I did when I got my disability was not build some crazy super rig and buy this Razer Naga and all this stuff. I bought a chair. I bought a very expensive chair that was good. It felt comfortable to sit in and supported my back. That was the first thing I did. And it cost me $400, but it was worth every penny. I still have the same chair. It doesn't need an upgrade. I'll be ready to upgrade this computer before I'm ready to upgrade this chair. That definitely helps a lot. But dealing with pain and dealing with pain management, just, I've had to learn a lot of things, because when you're constantly, your head's constantly cloudy, that's, you know, it's hard to think clearly about anything, much less be able to deal with, you know, let's say I get a cold or something. Sometimes that's enough to just ruin my day. Whereas, you know, having a cold before was no big deal, whatever. It's because if it's just addition, right? You keep adding on the things. I'm grateful that you followed me this long on Twitter, man. I can't imagine, like, you haven't wanted to just mute me before, because I either will just go blackout for 6 months or just rage for several days in a row and then be like, oh, I love this.
I think that's everyone on Twitter, actually, myself included. So
starting to kind of notice that a little.
So
it's basically there to just bitch.
So, I mean, was there any then, you know, just in relation to the thematically how this has been used in games a number of times, what was your experience with what happens in Sekiro and his use of a prosthesis?
It's genius. It blew my mind. Like, I know it's game design, right? And this is not, like, none of it's real, but it really got me thinking, like, well, what if some of this was kind of based on some history? Like, how much of this, because when I first lost my arm, that was what me and my friends were talking about. Like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if it had a blade, like, you know, dude from Deus Ex, or well, you think you could, what all could you put in there? Would it fit grenades? And it's like, no, man, why would I walk around with a, you know, it's not serious talk, just friends being, you know, they were drunk and being stupid and just thinking about, like, oh, what all different things could you do with an arm? And I'm like, I wish it was a future where I could just walk up to a system and be like, okay, I would like a soda from this machine, or give me 10 grand out of this ATM. You know, if you've seen the anime where the little finger pops up and the little wires come out, like, that would be amazing. But yeah, I love the use of the prosthetic, and I feel like that balances some of the difficulty, especially like early on. I've seen a lot of people have trouble with that first red eye ogre. And when I came across him, I had already done the memory and beaten Lady Butterfly. So I was super powerful. I felt super powerful. I mean, I had the flaming barrel, I had plenty of oil, and I totally messed that dude up. He might have killed me like once, twice maybe, because I didn't know about the ad with the spear. And that, there's definitely some moves that, like, once you get them, they tell you how useful they are, and they'll even warn you again. And some of the hand holding, that's actually hurt me. It's something I'm sure they didn't think about. So I have to take my hand off the mouse, go over to the escape on the keyboard, hit escape, try to get my hand back on the mouse before I get smacked. 9 times out of 10, I'm getting smacked. And I know they're doing it to help people and trying to remind them, like, hey, this is what this does. But that kept getting in the way for me. I realized what they're trying to do, and I know they're trying to make these games more accessible. And I think the fact that they sold 10 or 2 million copies in 10 days, that surprised me even. Like, I didn't think this game would do that good. These games are notoriously hard. My brother was like, I can't believe you're playing this. Not because he thinks I'm too disabled, but because he thinks it requires too much patience. They all have the impression they're so hard that, like, nobody can actually play these unless you just can control your rage.
Yeah, they do sort of have a I don't know, there's a sort of a mythic quality to this which is earned in many ways, but it has sort of, there's an urban legend aspect to it as well, which has kind of made it a bit ridiculous. One question actually we got from somebody, I put a call out for on Twitter just before we went live for questions, and one we got in actually rubs up against that, which was Video Attack asks, how much of the reputation for the series being obtuse and difficult do you think could be addressed and with proper tutorializing and making more in-depth mechanics easier to understand? I love the series, but I don't always feel they've done well explaining mechanics to the player. I found that in the early games, that was kind of part of the discovery of those games, was trying to figure it out. But Sekiro, I feel like, is so, like, I feel like you really have to defeat bosses in very particular ways, in ways that I maybe aren't, I don't know, maybe I'm just like lacking the patience for it a little bit or something. How do you feel? Because they've definitely done a better job of the tutorials. It's interesting to hear you say that the tutorials were getting in your way.
They definitely done that. Yeah. And that's just for me having one hand. Like, if, let's say maybe I had decided to put escape for whatever reason and I macroed that or put that on my footboard or somewhere on the mouse, then I wouldn't have this issue. But of all the keys that I could afford to re-keybind, like escape is almost never one of them. Escape and map are like the last two things I worry about in games. So they've definitely done a better job in terms of like addressing that. But I feel like it's only going to get as good as it can, right? They can only tell you this does this, and this is when you should use this. Now, whether you remember to use it then when you're supposed to, that's not really up to them, right? Like, a lot of it I feel like is perspective. Like, you can die to a boss 10 times and think, oh, this is bullshit, I'm never playing this game again. Or you can die 10 times, and during those 10 attempts, somewhere you see where you made a mistake. Maybe you panic, maybe you got over aggressive. I feel like their games, they're trying to teach you certain things, and then, but at a certain point they do expect you to put it all together. And not everyone is the type of gamer to have read the messages and pay attention to what it is, maybe even practice what the move is and been able to put it into practice at the right time. And I don't really know what they can do to do that besides even more severe handholding, which I think will just detract from the game, honestly.
It reminds me a little bit of just how games have changed over the past 20, 30 years. And one of the ones... instances where this sort of, at least from my experience, reads most clearly is the first game I ever completed was The Secret of Monkey Island on the Amiga, and it took me like, I think, 3 months. I was pretty young when it came out. I think I was 8 or 9, and it took me like 3 months, like a whole summer basically, to complete it. And then the remaster came out, I want to say it was on 360 and PS3 maybe, and it was really cool, and updated graphics and loads of like cool new music and all that stuff, but they also had the tip system in it. And there were like some things that you had to do in that game, like to get to one of the little, you know, islands off of Melee Island, you had to use a rubber chicken on a wire to like zip across it, which kind of makes no sense. And I remember being stuck on that forever. But like in this thing, you could use a tip and it would like, I think there was like 3 levels of tip. Like it would give you a little bit of a nudge, a little bit more of a nudge. And then it would just say, just use the fucking chicken wire on the wire, right? And I remember thinking like, oh, that's a good thing, right? Kind of, because it's helping people. But I guess it says less about how difficult games were and more about where our expectations of difficulty came from. Like,
yeah.
When that happened years ago, I didn't think, oh, they made this game wrong, or, you know, this is stupid, I wish they did something to let me know how to do this. I just thought, oh, I'm dumb, I don't know what to do to get to that island. Whereas these days we have this expectation that we sort of need to constantly be getting this positive feedback. Even when, like you said, in those boss fights, like oftentimes I'll die 10 times in a row, but it's because I was using the same tactics 10 times in a row.
Right.
Other games might actually, some games, you know, if you play the boss fight for the third time, they, without letting you know, will make that boss fight easier. And they don't signal us. Like, games are constantly doing this sort of stuff.
The new Resident Evil does that, I believe. I died one too many times in the police station. And they were like, would you like to make the game easier? And I was like offended by it. I was like, hey, man, F you. It's not my fault your buddy cornered me. I was trying to leave. I appreciate the offer. But at the same time, I was like, that'd be great for someone who needs it. And it didn't offend me that it was in the game. It just offended me that they thought I needed it. I was like, hey, I got this, man. Leave me alone. But I have no problem with it being in the game. I honestly don't care.
And that was an instance where they told you, where sometimes they don't even bother telling you. Actually, now that I think about it, there is another bell. Speaking of bells from Bloodborne, there's a bell in Sekiro. Have you seen this one? The like the bell that you can ring and it makes the bosses harder?
You know what? I've come across it, but is that what it does? It makes stuff harder?
I think it does. It does two things. I think it makes one thing easier and one thing harder. Like, I think it might increase the drop rate on certain things, but it makes the bosses more difficult. I don't know exactly what it is, but it definitely, if you ring it, it will make the game harder in some respect.
I come across it, and the message was a little bit cryptic. Like, it sort of made it sound like it was going to be a harder game if you rang the bell.
Yeah, it's like don't ring the bell or something.
Yeah. I'm just going to ignore this for now until I know what this is. I'm sure there'll be a lore video on it eventually that I can figure out whether or not I should ring it. It kind of, this kind of makes me think of like, Wolfenstein and Doom, you could pick easy mode in those games and then have them like sucking on a pacifier, like they letting you know, like, hey, you can play this way, but don't you feel like a man about it, you know, like don't go bragging about it. You know, that's, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Why not?
And it's really funny that you mentioned that, because when this conversation was happening, I think one of the questions I put out was like, just, you know, let me know a game you play on easy because you don't care. And the one I said was, whenever I'm in like really bad turbulence on a flight, I have my Switch with me usually. And what I usually do is I just put it on easy mode and I try and score as many goals as I can. And it kind of takes my mind off things. But the one that so many people kept saying, which actually, now that I think about it, I have totally done as well, is the machine games, Wolfenstein games. Like, those games are brutally hard. Yeah. And a lot of the time, they're kind of, I don't know, I feel like a lot of us play it because we want to feel powerful, but also we just want to see what the story, where it goes.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's a game that a lot of people play on an easier mode just so they can get through it and enjoy the experience.
I used to play the Call of Duties on the hard, whatever, like the veteran or hard, whatever the hardest one was, until I realized, I don't remember which, it was probably one of your videos or somebody's videos, was like, you know, this is just a visible line you have to cross, right? As soon as you cross that invisible line, stop spawning. And I was like, oh shit. See, you mean I've purposely like just been driving myself crazy, because some of those games, there's certain sections where you're just like, oh, how did he shoot me? No way.
That's your World of Warcraft shit. You were farming them. You were just like sitting back and farming these dudes.
Basically, I'm thinking like, oh, we're going to make it. Oh, no, here comes some more. It's just like, I'm killing myself. And for what? Like, I could be having the same level of enjoyment and not, my frustration level's not getting near as high if I just turn it to the appropriate difficulty. And now whether or not they should, there's a whole other can of worms. Should they include it? Like, if it's going to take away resources and time, and if they have a vision, I think you're getting more into the, like, the singular vision versus the design by committee, right? Like, Miyazaki obviously has a singular vision for his games, but I don't think he enjoys the fact that everyone thinks his games are so hard. I don't think that's something he takes pride in. I think he wants more people to play them. I think he's pretty much said as much.
So I guess, yeah, taking, you know, everything we've talked about today, like the different ways in which games can be more accessible to people, the sort of amorphous conversation about cheesing and difficulty and cheats and how they all sort of blend into each other, as somebody who has, you know, experience in these games, who enjoys them, who has been playing them, as far as I'm concerned, on a very much harder difficulty level than most of us, what do you feel about Sekiro and how challenging it is, and how, you know, how you were able to play it as somebody with a disability? Sort of where do you land on it?
Honestly, it's since I downloaded that mod a couple days ago, it really got me thinking, because essentially I've done the same thing the PC gamer guy has done, except I haven't enabled the cheats, right? Like, you can, some people may say, oh, you're using ultra wide or an unlocked frame rate, like you're cheating. And I would say, yeah, but I paid for that 2080, right? Like, I want my frames. I paid for this ultra wide. I'm not changing the game design so much as I'm just adding things they should have, like, maybe thought about. They're going to release a PC port today. I love the challenge. I feel like each encounter is sounds cliche, but it's like a dance of death, right? Like, if you get surrounded by two or three normal guys, they can kill you. The bosses are very, very hard. Now, granted, I haven't beaten the game. I'm sure there's going to be a boss where I'm just like, oh my God, I'm going to die 20 plus times. But so far, like, the most I've died was maybe, actually, it was the guy after Blazing Bull. I can't remember the name. I started calling him General Fuck You, because every time I would get up to him, he'd just be like, fuck you, you're not getting past the gate. And he was such a bitch. He had like a grab and a sweep, and then also like it was the first guy I think I encountered that had three of the warnings, and they were all different things. So it took me a while, and you're fighting in that closed little section between the walls, and it made the camp, that was a pain. I probably died 10 plus times to him. That's probably the only guy I've died that much to. Like, maybe Lady Butterfly might have died like 7 or 8, 9 times, maybe. I love it for what it is, and I can't thank you enough for it, man. I've had a blast playing it. It's really made me think about a lot of different things. Eventually, I'd like to make a video on it, something, do something more than, you know, but I appreciate being brought on this podcast, man. I've had a blast thinking about this and ways that we could try to improve the game for people with disabilities. And I feel like they've done the best job they could. These controls are super responsive. I think transcendent is probably the best way I can describe it. I don't feel like I'm using a mouse and a footboard when I'm playing. I feel like I'm the one-arm wolf.
Well, you are the one-arm wolf, and we really appreciate you coming in to... there you go. Like, just in case you didn't already have enough really good internet handles, you can add that one to your repertoire. We really appreciate your time playing the game and coming on to talk to us today. For folks who want to follow you, where can they catch you on the Twitter and whatnot?
Disabled Cable on Twitter.
Awesome. Good stuff. And how much more time do you think you have with it? Just as the parting question, do you think this will be something you play for the rest of the year or another couple of weeks?
Honestly, probably another couple months. I tend to have, like, I'll have my action game, I'll have my shooter, and then I'll usually have like a role playing game. And some of those can be interchanged, could be kind of be the same thing. And this has been like my go-to, like, all right, I'm really, this is my single player game. If I'm going to play something with my brothers, it's either going to be Destiny or Vermintide. Not playing any MMOs now. So this is, I'll probably beat it sometime. I would say the next month and a half, something like that, maybe.
Awesome. Well, we wish you well on the journey. I'll be right there with you. I'll be like probably a couple of bosses behind you, actually. Thank you so much for coming on. And thank you so much to all of our patrons for funding our work. As ever, you know, you can follow us on Twitter at NoClipVideo. I am at Daniel Dwyer on Twitter, r/NoClip. If you want to follow us on Reddit, and of course, this podcast is available early. If you're a patron, go to patreon.com/NoClip to support this show, get it early, and also support all the documentaries we make on our YouTube channel.
Go hit up this man's Patreon. Come on, y'all.
Hit up. Thank you so much. We've actually got another YouTube channel for the podcast, youtube.com/noclippodcast, if you want to watch this one. Alternatively, we are available on basically every podcast service in the known universe: iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and loads more. SoundCloud as well. We fixed the SoundCloud. There was a problem with our uploads, but it's all right and ready now. Thank you so much for listening. Subscribe, give us a review if you can. We never asked really much, so if you can do that on iTunes or whatever, give us a good review. Don't give us a review if you think it's shit, maybe just like forget this part of the podcast and go do something else. Thank you for listening, thank you for your time, and we'll see you next time. Actually, hold up one second. One little thing to add to the podcast before we close it out. I got an email from Clint after we recorded, who felt bad that he had, in the haze of the podcast conversation, forgotten to call out two important people that helped him quite a lot on his journey. The first person is his brother Matt, who sent him the Naga, which he used when he first started coming back to play games. And the other is his friend Kyle, who was actually building him a two-button foot switch when they found out that there was somebody who was actually making one commercially. The stinky board, which he ended up using afterwards. Clint's journey to actually being able to play games was quite long. He was in bed for the best part of a year, had to play on a laptop, and then through the help of using those inputs, like over the course of the next couple of months, learned to play with his feet and learned to play properly with one hand. So he wanted to give a shout out to the two of them, who helped him so much when all this was going on, you know, 6-5 years ago. And I thought I should definitely make the point of sticking it in to the end of this podcast. So thank you so much to Matt and Kyle. Clearly he couldn't get to where he is right now without your support and help. So thank you very much.